How was this country in 1585 before the white man arrived? We have a very interesting interview going here with a couple of people down in East Texas, Jim Lilly and Molly Whitehorse. And Jim, we were talking just before the break about the life probably much better for the American Indian, the Native American, before the white man showed up with all of our modern-day tools. When you saw or you were taken back in time and place by grandfather, could you smell the air and the land and the flowers and the plants and the trees?
It was very much a different time and space. It struck me when grandfather would take me away from my home, and you kind of traveled outside of the neighborhood, and all of a sudden it dawned on you that, wait a minute, we're in a different place. The moisture with the fog would cover the ground. It would smell of different places that it came from in the local area, the different fauna and flora. And then as the sun would warm the earth, you could see for miles that there was nothing in the air to prevent, you know, unlimited vision. We'd cross streams and rivers. You could look out 40 or 50 feet away from you and actually see the fish 5 or 6 feet down in the water. And it was the kind of experience that you almost think cannot possibly be, because we live in a day-to-day society where we just accept whatever is around us.
Now, before this experience in 2004, were you interested in the environment, ecology?
I grew up in a family that hunted and fished. My parents, living a long time in Las Vegas, Nevada, we bought a ranch in southern Utah, and when I graduated from high school that year, we actually moved there and raised cattle, hunted, fished. We had a close association with the earth, there's no doubt about it.
Molly, are you a Texas lady?
No.
Okay. Are you from Utah or someplace?
No. I was actually born in Tennessee, but I've traveled all over the United States.
Okay. I'm just curious. The reason I was asking, I'm trying to get when's the first time, Molly, that you met grandfather? I mean, you told the story earlier about you were on the ranch. And you looked at, I mean, that was in East Texas, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and that was later in your life before you moved there, right?
Yeah.
So, earlier on, I guess what I'm getting at is, you've probably grown spiritually and in your contacts during your life.
Yeah.
And so have you changed your mind about anything, about the spiritual world?
No, just that a lot of people are missing out on a lot of neat stuff. I haven't changed my mind. I have found it very curious that people of late that I have talked to, I don't realize that I have a different vocabulary and viewpoint, and it's been being pointed out to me that here I'll talk about a spirit and not think twice about it, or answer an animal in front of somebody, because I've gotten to the point where I don't hide my gifts anymore. And they'll ask me, well, what did they just say to you?
Well, what's the answer?
Well, sometimes it's about food. Sometimes it's about, you know, if the baby's upset, what's wrong, what's going on, you know, what's happening.
And then do these spirits talk to you with a voice, or is it telepathy, or what?
You would basically would have to say it's a combination of telepathy and voice.
Mm-hmm.
There has been some people that have been around me and said, now I heard that, why?
Oh, really? How do you explain that? Is it some sort of little buffer zone there between this world and some other place? I mean, you know, how come sometimes you can hear something and sometimes you can't?
I think I'd like to answer that one.
Okay.
I've been on the receiving end of a couple of these, and of course, being Mr. Skeptic here, very intriguing. But if know, people have pets, and they talk to their pets all the time.
Yeah, I talk to my dog all the time.
You probably don't realize that he's talking back to you all the time and probably wondering why you don't answer him directly about a specific subject. But we've got one animal that kind of came into the whole mix of things just about the time I was starting to write down the journey. And from time to time, and I know he's not saying anything directly to me, so it has to be a telepathic connection. But I've heard him ask questions, look at me and chuckle and give me a comment like, oh man, you missed that one, or you're being foolish, or something like that. And it's not all the time, and I don't sit and talk to the dog, that's for sure. But every now and then, I'll catch something that comes from that.
Well, I get, even though I don't get the conversation from my schnauzer Buster, I do get the impression that he is communicating with me.
Yes.
And I imagine, Molly, you're out there with those cattle. Do they communicate?
Oh, yes. In fact, Jim had an event that, you know, we were moving some cows, and we told the person, don't worry about it, just tell them what to do. And very skeptical about the event, and Jim told him exactly who was going to go and who wasn't going to go, and that's exactly who got loaded up. So all the animals talk. It doesn't matter whether they're a butterfly or a hummingbird or a cow or a sheep. They all have their type of lingo like we do as humans. You know, depending on where we are, we have our slang and things. Which is very interesting. I've, you know, never sat down and talked to anybody directly about that unless there's somebody else that has the ability to hear. But I've even found trees talking.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And I know you people that are really, you know, raise flower gardens, et cetera, do think that music and singing and conversation helps.
Oh, it does. Because, see, that's what the basis of a lot of the experience you'll have in these books. These people talk to everything. The earth, the plants, the animals, the air, spirit.
Sticks and rocks. It may seem strange, but I've actually gone on hunting parties where they have talked the animals into a position to sacrifice themselves so that these people will have meat for the winter. And when you experience that firsthand, you have to stand there in awe.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to get at. When you raise cattle, ultimately many of those are going to be, you know, food. I wonder how they take that.
I've got a whole pen full of them right alongside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had to set it in my family's mind first that you can name, you can play, you can talk, whatever you want to do with these animals. When it's time for them to go to market or time for them to be butchered, this is what we're raising them for, and that's what's going to have to be done. But personally, I'm the one that has to do it. So it's kind of a gut-wrenching thing. And I have had to take an animal from a standing animal to the skinning, butchering, killing, everything, right down to the steaks on the table. And lately, when I do, I ask them when they are ready. I give them everything that I can possibly give them. They have the best life on earth. They know that they're not going to be here forever. And when they say they're ready, then we'll do it. I've had some of them say, well, I'm not ready. And we'll let it go for a couple of months. Now, I know that sounds silly. I'm not one of these.
Well, I find that interesting. I don't know if it's silly or not. I find it interesting that it's a way to deal with that, because I have a love-hate relationship with the idea of eating meat, animals.
That's been the toughest thing for me. But when you can take a pinch of tobacco, a pinch of corn, release that spirit, and then go on with your duties and know that that animal has sacrificed himself so that you can sustain your life and your family, then it means that much more to you when you sit down to dinner.
Interesting, for sure. Grandfather, was your guide, and I guess for both of you, really.
Seems that way.
And is grandfather alive somewhere? I guess he is, or he wouldn't be talking to you people. In other words,
his spirit comes to visit quite often, yes. I've actually had him bring other people to...
I mean, you know, we talk about the happy hunting ground, or we talk about heaven, or we talk about whatever. Where is Grandpa?
I would say at this point that there has to be a heaven that they dwell in as elders and ancestors, and if they feel it compelling to come visit the normal people on Earth, they will take that opportunity to do so.
Molly, in your psychic world, do you have any feel about the other side? I mean, what's happening with it? To me, many people talk to me about, well, they're sitting in the park listening to the birds or whatever, but that sounds very boring.
Well, what I have discovered since a very little kid, because I was told I live in two worlds. From a very little child, the elders have always said I lived in two worlds. And depending on the background of the individuals would depend on the environment that they chose to be in. It's almost as if you would create the same environment that you enjoyed on the other side, and that's how they exist. But see, the thing of it is, it's just not sitting there all the time. They actually live a parallel reality, best way I can explain it. They're still growing. They're still experiencing. They're still having events that they're learning from, but at a different level. And depending on their belief systems and how that they're looking at it, usually depends on how their environment and that world for them is existing.
How expensive are these books, Jim?
I sell them for $12 a piece individually, or they can get the first three in a set for $30,
mm-hmm.
plus a small handling fee. Actually, it cost me as much to mail them out as the handling fee.
I understand.
I'm not looking for that, but I would like to do them more inexpensively, but I actually made a higher quality book, and I did this myself with this publisher. I had to actually start my own publishing company because I got tired of trying to actually sell it to somebody. I'm not a very good salesman in that form.
Well, it's not easy.
And she said, put the quality into the actual book, and then people will enjoy the message that they get out of it.
Either one of you can answer, or both of you, on this. Can other people take this journey into time and space?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Well, basically...
I mean, not that need you to introduce them to grandfather, I imagine.
No, but they would need someone who is capable of helping them set the proper frame of mind, so that when they do get a contact for a journey like this, or whatever they're seeking, then they're ready for it. Otherwise, I'm sure people have had different experiences, and they thought, oh, that was great, and then let it go, and that's the last thing they ever hear of it. This could have been something significant in their life that they never got to finish.
How's your wife feel about all this, Jim?
Well, she was just about as bad a skeptic as I was. And in the book, there is, if you accept me as the person in the book of Buffalo Turning, he has quite a life experience there. She has accepted that as a different time and space and an experience that I need to share with other people.
In the book, I think you're talking about you. You seem to have... had an encounter or something.
Grandfather literally introduced me to the Buffalo Mountain people and their village, and they accepted me as an addition to that village. And I live with those people in that time and space when I go there. And that has been...
How long are you gone? Just during the night while you're sleeping?
Yes.
Do you have a clue when this is going to happen to you?
No, and I seem to lately be able to do it whenever I actually would like to.
Oh, really?
I can fall asleep and want to, you know, to be in that journey. And then the next morning I can get up, go to work, I'm ready to go. Get out my little pencil and pad when I've got a moment and just start. This stuff flows like it's the hand is independently wealthy of words.
Has your wife noted that when you're making these journeys in your sleep, do you behave differently while you're laying there?
No. She said I'm the same person. Still hard to get up when the alarm rings.
Yeah. I can identify with that.
The only thing that she can say that she's noted is that when there has been events on the other side, and both Jim and I had discussed it, there was a event with a cougar attack. And when he woke up, he saw the red marks, the burning. He felt the burning of the sensation, very sore. I was over there with him to deliver a message and ended up breaking my ribs over there. And I remembered, you know, being thrown back into this reality because the pain was so intense that the next morning I woke up with a set of broken ribs and he had the markings from the cat claws.
Really?
Yeah. It was, from then on, you cannot be Mr. Super Skeptic.
So, did you have claw markings on your body?
No, I had what would be probably a week's healing after those claw marks. But you could tell something had happened to me. And I know something happened to Molly. She hobbled around here for 4 or 5 weeks.
Now, Molly, were you and Jim, were you guys together in this other world in the cougar attack?
Yes.
I was on a horse and he was on the ground.
So you both had the same vision or same reality.
It was the same reality. When she actually read what I had written down about 4 or 5 days later after that experience, I asked her what she thought, and she never answered me. She just looked up from the manuscript with tears in her eyes, shook her head, and never said a word.
So when you go to this other place and other time, it's not all goody-two-shoes stuff. I mean, things do happen.
Oh, yeah.
To give another example was he was going through a spiritual ritual, and there was a very negative event of two young men that did not want him to be able to experience a spiritual journey. And they kind of beat him up and did some killing of other animals, and the next day we found two of the cows dead, the same position that the animals that they killed on the other side were. Two cows were in the backyard with no reason, evidence, or nothing, dead in the same position that these two boys killed the animals that he was dealing with on the other side.
Evil still transgresses this earth one into the other. It's after us. We have to be vigilant every day.
So the fact of good and evil is just as alive in this journey on the other side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have to deal with it. Sickness is a type of evil. Death, they have to live with this every single day. And they find their own ways of dealing with these things, just as we do here.
We're about ready to wrap this up. Time's about to get us, but it's an incredible story and an incredible series, and you say you have more books.
I do indeed, yes. Just as soon as the hand can write them down. I actually write these down longhand. I haven't been able to put them in a notebook or a computer or anything like that, so somebody has to go along and type in every single thing that I've written down and put them in.
Now, I've got a question about grandfather and the rest of these Native Americans from 1585, do they have a certain tribe or something? Are there several tribes or what?
Several tribes that we have come across and been introduced to, and they give themselves names. They call themselves, "We are the people." They almost all universally do that, but they have their own names, like the Desert Mountain people was a neighboring tribe, and the Buffalo people, that the tribe that I was with. There's different prairie tribes, Big River tribes.
Well, you know what I'm getting at. We're talking about evil. Is there tribal warfare going on?
There was one instance where there was some bad seeds in one particular. particular tribe, and when the people did not deal with that specifically, as time went on, the younger generation pretty well rebelled, and there was a very serious war time across the prairie until they got a handle on it. But it wasn't constant. It was just that one particular instance that I've come across so far. And once they dealt with that and got back with their original elders and medicine men and took care of their basics, then they were able to deal with the evil among them.
Well, our time's about up, Molly. You got anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that we pretty much covered it. I hope that people will be willing to step into their pathways and discover that they all have this ability. They just have to have the desire and want to be able to walk the good red road.
Jim, you started out as a skeptic, and you ended up here as a believer. Has that changed your view of dying and afterlife?
Yes, indeed. I witnessed the death of an old lady, and it is in the first book. And
now, what's the name of that first book?
The first book is The Spirit Walk with Grandfather. And after witnessing that, I don't fear death as I did before. You can't look at it the same way and witness such a beautiful event that I witnessed.
So basically, Jim Lilly, you look upon all of this as a positive thing, even though you're being used as a messenger.
I have found this to be a very positive experience. Yes.
Molly Whitehorse, you think it's positive too, right?
Yes. Yes. I've seen this man go from hypercritical, kind of grumpy, to somebody that is happy inside and out, and more open to know that things can happen positively and overcome anything that's dark.
Okay, we have a link to all of this here on the website where this radio show is found. And basically, we urge people to investigate this in more detail. And you guys would be glad to answer any questions that come up, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. We have a link on the website where they can contact us if they have got any questions. If they had any serious questions, Molly will be more than happy to take phone calls or to give them a call.
Okay, thank you both.
Certainly.
I've enjoyed it. And basically, I guess in closing, this time back in the 15th century, almost the 16th century, before the white man arrived, it was totally different. But at the same time, human values being what they are, I guess humanity for the goodness is accented there.
I believe so.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Jerry.
We always give thanks to the earth itself and always try to walk with respect, because if we don't realize that all of the earth has power and energy, then we might not be able to receive whatever that particular place has for us. And all of that, you know, is part of what people commonly refer to as the circle. And we're all a part of it.
Great Spirit of God, we want to thank you again for this wonderful day, the many things you bless us with, and also your teachings in this world. You gave your prophets to teach, all your prophets to teach about these four things: love, respect, and faith, and unity. These are your teachings. You gave an order to be taught all over the world. And we thank you for those teachings, where we can observe them and believe in them and preach them. Shemandu, Knadasko Migo, Nanongomani Pemina Ujan Knagego, Wedishkaki Jikunamu Adonanandok. Nanandok Kunamuaganak We Chikunamage Wat Yue Shawendi Win zamagayan damuin. Si kuminawa, iwet, tayo buwet tamuin, tayo buwet tamuin. Wega e wita no kimitin, wita no kimitin. Ne iwet sa ne iwet no kuminawa, na na kumigawin. Iwas, may go. Ow.
The Spirit Walk program was produced and edited by Jane Smortley. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Cheers.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.